Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Joining us is a very good friend of mine, former Giants quarterback, Sage Rosenfeld. Sage, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing all right, Anita. Obviously, it's been such a sad and tough time this week in America, and it's really been something else, and I'm sure we'll talk about that today. But I'm so fortunate, my personal self. You know, I'm quasi retired, live in the suburbs of middle America, and all of this is not on my doorstep. And I have not had to deal with, racism in my life as a white male, or sexism as a white male. So, I grew up in a town of 300 people, and I grew up in this tiny little bubble of everybody around me was pretty much like me. I don't know if I almost ever saw a person of color of any other race when I was growing up. My dad was from Chicago, so when we would go into Chicago, that was pretty much the only time I saw people who were not like me, other than, of course, on television. And once I got a college scholarship, that is really the first time when you sit down at the training room tables and when you're eating and those, and you start having these conversations with these guys who are now your teammates, who are now becoming your friends, who are from all over the country. And they're from their own bubble also. They're not from a tiny town of 300 in eastern Iowa. They're from maybe Liberty City, Florida, or a tough part of Houston. And all of that, those thoughts about who people are and what they stand for, all those things change, I think, for a lot of college athletes when they get to that level, because that all you really care about is, are they a good teammate? Are they going to be doing their job? Are they in this thing? Because you're all trying to form together as this team to go forward, to try to win as many games as possible, win a championship, whatever it might be. And so to learn about where everyone had come from, man, that was such a shock to me, because my life was so very, very different than all these now friends and teammates that I got in college that come from very, very different backgrounds. And I think that changed my entire life of how I view this situation.
It's very interesting. Again, Sage Rosenfeld is joining us, and a few reasons why I wanted to book you on the show, and that is because of how familiar you are with Minneapolis and in that entire area. I thought that you could shed some light on the situation there, but also, I'm curious. Did you read Dan Orlovsky's comment that he posted on Twitter? And it pretty much kind of mirrors what you just shared with us. And I'm going to read it briefly, because I'd like to have a conversation with you in regard to how sports and the platform of sports and athletes could maybe help the situation that we find ourselves in today. And this is what Dan had to say. A main reason why sports mattered to me: I'm a white guy who grew up in a mainly white area. I spent most of my life around black men because of playing college football and in the NFL. What happened over that time was the poison, lies, stereotypes that I was led to believe about the black community as a kid were wiped away. My whole adult life has been spent around good-hearted, integrity-filled, hardworking, kind, funny, intelligent, conscious, motivated, loyal, friendly, trustworthy, amazing, successful black people. Without sports, here's where I think it gets real and what really moved me. And I agree with this. Without sports, I don't think I have those lies wiped away. I wish everyone could experience this. I think everyone needs to experience this in some way. As a parent, my kids 100% will. And it's just, it's so, some of my dearest friends, some of my closest friends, some of my best friends, some of my real relationships, Sage, and I'm sure I know you will agree with me, have been with people that I have gone to war with in sport. And the majority of them are African American. And not that I went out there and chose it that way. It's just, it's, I grew up in Miami. I like to call it a melting pot. Played women's professional football, played a lot of basketball. And, you know, there is a relationship that develops between athletes, on that level. And it's special and it's unique. And if there was a poll or if there was some type of, not investigation, but if there was some type of, report, I would imagine that the majority of Caucasian men and women who at some point in time played organized sports would be, you would find them to be less prejudiced. Agree or disagree?
Oh, I agree with that 100%. And, you know, listen, when you're on a football team, and of all the sports, I think football really does, when you play the sport, college, pros, there's people from all over. You know, you do have guys from tiny small towns, you have guys from big cities, you guys have guys from the burbs, from the inner city, from the country, you know, California. Every part of this country is on your football team. And it's not just where they're from and not just race, it's religion too. It's history. It's guys, you know, that are one generation removed from their parents came from Nigeria or something. I mean, I could tell you how many Nigerian teammates I played with, like the Ian Badejo brothers, who both played for the Ravens and won Super Bowls. I mean, it's such a melting pot. And when you're on a team like that, and everyone is so important, and it's like a chain, you know, like the weakest link is, you're only as strong as your weakest link. So everyone's in this thing together, and you rely on these guys to protect you. You don't care what color they are. You don't care what religion they are. You care if they're going to protect you. You care if they're going to make that tackle and fit that gap and all those things. So everyone is in this thing together. And all those other, you know, as you say, sort of prejudices or thoughts about, you know, what that religion might be or who that person might be because of their skin color, that all disappears. And it's all about performance and how they compete and how they play and what they care about on your football team. And so that, yeah, it teaches you so many things and to respect them, but and also to learn from them. You know, it said that, you know, you think you have some answers when I grew up in town about how people are, but then you actually do learn, like, man, I could not imagine how tough it would be to grow up in schools, in inner city schools, going through metal detectors before you walk into school, or to have violence, like to see violence. I cannot even imagine what it would be like to, if you got pulled over, to be concerned for your life. If you're pulled over going 12 miles an hour over the speed limit, I have no concern that something truly bad is going to happen to me. The worst that's going to happen to me is I get a $150 or $200 ticket. That's what I'm concerned about. But for a lot of other people in this country, they are scared for their lives. And to live on eggshells like that, to live a true concern is if you leave the house that day, you might do something that would upset somebody else into shooting you, and then to get away with it for decades and decades. This has been going on for a long time, and I think the difference is, by the way, is the video camera, the camera on our phones now is helping us see all of this stuff that's going on for a long time. But I guess back to your question, what sports does? It's such a it's all about, you know, how you play. It's all about how you compete. It's all about how you are as a teammate and all those other sort of prejudices you've been trained to have by TV and media and all this stuff. Now, you've been trained to think a certain way. All of a sudden, those things change because of sports, because you're just trying to win the game and using that person next to you to have that same effort. And then it helps you respect all the other things that person stands for, because you know that they're true and how they work, and you know they are dedicated as far as, you know, being a good teammate and those types of things. And you want to be as dedicated to them, and you don't want to be judged on my past either. I don't want to be, you know, that these guys when I was playing that these guys from different parts go, well, he's just a redneck from Eastern Iowa. I don't feel like I am that. right? So don't judge me on that. So I think sports is just sort of the ultimate sort of equalizer. It's all about sort of winning and losing. But the team sports thing, I think, really does change a lot of hearts and minds of how athletes all see this world of race and this world that we are currently living in.
It's just a shame. We just, you know, playing organized sports and knowing the camaraderie and knowing the family feel and what it's like, you know, in a locker room and spending that much time with your teammates and not, not to say not paying attention to color, but living and experiencing and, what it is to be on a team where it's not about the color of your skin and only if that can translate to what we're going through in life right now, Sage, you know?
Yeah, it just, you know, in sports, it's about performance. In life, it's about, you know, your character and who you stand for. But also in sports, as we see, nearly every single professional team is owned by a white person. The vast majority of general managers and head coaches in all sports are white people, despite the fact that a lot, if not the majority of the athletes are not white, right? So we actually do see in sports how America is also structured. The people doing the real work, sort of the talent, are a lot of times a mix of America's population. But the people who own everything and control everything are almost 100% white. And that's where sports and like a lot of other things, sports is a direct there's a resemblance of actual America. And that's something that hopefully will change and these leagues will start to step up and start to try to change some of these things, because it is unacceptable that, you know, of the 32 NFL teams where we have three African-American coaches or something like that. It's mm-hmm. just absolutely unacceptable that, you know, they aren't seen. They're only seen as the labor. They're not seen as management. And there's no reason why that's the case.
Art imitating life, sport emulating life, I should say. Emulating life. Before I let you go, I want to share this with you as well. This is something that Carson Wentz had posted on his Twitter feed as well. Been thinking about the George Floyd situation and thinking of the words to say and coming up empty. All I know is that the institutional racism in this country breaks my heart and needs to stop. Can't even fathom what the black community has to endure on a daily basis. Being from North Dakota, I've spent a large part of my life surrounded by people of similar color. So I'm never going to act like I know what the black community goes through or even has gone through already. I'll never know the feeling of having to worry about my kids going outside because of the color of their skin. However, I do know that we are all equal at the foot of the cross, and Jesus taught us to value each other's lives like they were our own, regardless of skin tone. So this might seem like a ramble, and perhaps it is. I don't understand the society we live in that doesn't value all human life. It's heartbreaking and disturbing. My prayers go out to every man, woman, and child that has to endure the effects of racism in our society. So I just, you know, it's...
Can I say something? You know, what Carson said and what Dan Orlovsky said... And, you know,
and what you said,
random quarterback of things that I'm trying to get out there. You know, I am white, and, you know, black people, people of color, minorities, they can't do this on their own. It actually is going to take the people who are in the majority and in power, which is white people, to actually be as offended as they are. And try to understand what they are trying to go through, and to stick our necks out and to be uncomfortable and to maybe take some risks of, you know, future dollars that we may lose out on, or a future contract with a shoe company because we say something that might offend some people. It's going to take people who are in those power positions to help out those who are not. And I think what Carson Wentz said, what Dan Orlovsky said, it's vital. And it's not about Republican and Democrat. And I think that's where we have to change our thought on that. It's because, you know, Republican, Democrat, you're talking about taxes and various social issues. And this is about race and trying to understand why, in particular, African-American people have been sort of put in a place in this country where it's nearly impossible to get out of the hole that white people put them in. And until we start to understand and educate ourselves on not just slavery and not just, you know, the Jim Crow laws, things that happened, you know, 50 years ago, 60 years, but the things that are currently going on now. And this right here, what we're dealing with in Minneapolis and all across the country with police versus, you know, people who are African-American and how they're arrested and the aggressive nature which that occurs, that is all a part of the same thing that goes back hundreds of years of keeping people down and keeping them oppressed. And it's going to be people who are white, people who have money, people who have all the privilege in the world to try to help those people out in any way we can. And that's going to take risk. That's going to take being uncomfortable. And, you know, for me, you know, I'm 42 years old. I retired from football 8 years ago. I don't need anybody's money. I don't need anyone's job. I don't care if people don't like me. I'm willing to take those risks to try to help people out. And I tell you, from this point forward, I'm not going to just tweet about it or talk to my friends about it. I'm actually going to try to find ways to take real action in my life to try to help those who have been oppressed since their birth.
God bless you, Sage. Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Anita. Thanks for having me on.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.